What if the answer to our frantic, overscheduled lives was written 1,500 years ago by a monk watching civilization collapse? During Rome's fall, amid political turmoil, economic inequality, and social upheaval that mirror our own era, Benedict of Nursia penned a slim volume that would guide millions through chaos. His rule wasn't meant for saints, but for ordinary people struggling to find meaning when the world seemed to be ending. Today, as we doom-scroll through crises and sprint from one achievement to the next, this ancient text offers something radical: permission to slow down, listen deeply, and build lives of genuine substance. The transformation begins not with grand gestures, but with a whisper. Listen with the ear of your heart. The rule opens with a single word that challenges everything our culture teaches. Listen. Not passive hearing while checking phones, but active, full-body attention that requires setting aside assumptions. When couples argue, they often talk past each other, filtering words through their own perceptual screens. Try this. Repeat what someone said and ask, "Am I understanding you correctly?" The exercise reveals how rarely we actually listen. Benedict introduces mutual obedience, reciprocal listening where everyone's voice matters. Sister Joan Chittister was denied her dream creative writing program and assigned as a third cook instead. Though initially resentful, the kitchen experience taught her about community service that enriched her writing. A truck driver father's simple advice, "When you're hungry, you eat. When you're tired, you sleep," proved profound when exhaustion landed me in the hospital. The wisest voices aren't always the loudest or most credentialed. They're the ones who've learned that truth often speaks in whispers. Benedict's rule pulses with urgency. "Let us get up then, at long last." He echoes Scripture's warning that it is high time to arise from sleep, using action verbs: open, run, hasten. Run while you have the light of life, that the darkness of death may not overtake you. This isn't morbid, but realistic. We have limited days, so we might as well wake up and truly live them. Rising at 4 a.m. reveals wonders invisible to late sleepers: polite skunks, statue-still rabbits, shooting stars. At Kentucky's Abbey of Gethsemane, stepping outside before dawn revealed the Milky Way's doorway of starlight. The desert monks considered night silence a valuable teacher, reminding us that time is finite. Yet waking up means more than noticing nature. It means truly seeing people. As a young reporter, I interviewed a jovial Santa who seemed filled with joy, only to receive his tearful Christmas Eve call, revealing he was homeless, divorced, and suicidal. How had I missed his pain? The Benedictine way asks us to wake up to the sacred in daily life and truly see those around us. Perhaps the greatest gift we offer is letting others know they are seen and heard. I've always feared death terribly, often waking seized with anxiety. This began at 4 when hearing, "Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think," made me weep. My mother's sudden stroke death reawakened this terror. How could someone joking over eggplant parmesan one Sunday simply not exist the next? Benedict's instruction to remind yourself daily that you are going to die resonated deeply. Witnessing a young mother killed instantly by a falling window, death seemed like a maniacal sharpshooter randomly selecting targets. Yet my 89-year-old friend Sister Lillian offered wisdom: "I don't think about dying, I think about living." The sisters confront death tenderly, keeping vigils, processing to the cemetery. Their equanimity comes from confidence that each has lived meaningfully. The fundamental question isn't whether there's life after death, but whether there's life before death. Philosopher Stephen Cave suggests seeing life as a book bounded by birth and death, where the only thing that matters is that it's a good story. We fill our lives with pain and excitement, evil and good, pleasure and despair, and atop it all, gratitude and love for one another. Fear pervades our world. Parisians avoid the metro, undocumented families keep packed bags, Muslim women scan their surroundings. Yet Brooklyn offers hope, a mini United Nations where Hasidic Jews shop at halal markets run by Egyptian immigrants and children of different backgrounds play together. This peaceful coexistence contrasts sharply with Jerusalem, where similar groups remain bitterly divided. Benedict's Tools for Good Works provides practical guidance for ethical living, emphasizing the golden rule: never do to another what you do not want done to yourself. These aren't recommendations, but tools requiring lifelong practice, like a carpenter constantly maintaining their implements. My fractured relationship with my brother illustrates this difficulty. After our mother's death, accusations and defensive responses created a rift that remains unhealed decades later. I failed Benedict's wisdom. If you have a dispute with anyone, make peace before the sun goes down. This teaching recognizes how resentment hardens over time, like cement setting in our hearts. Healing requires courage, kindness, and forgiveness, tools we must not let rust. At the Abbey of Gethsemane, profound silence greets visitors. Only insects humming, distant cars, wind rustling through leaves. This quiet deeply impressed Thomas Merton when he arrived in 1941. He later wrote that silence serves as an echo chamber for truth found only in the heart. While talk is the world's currency, in Benedictine life, silence is the pearl of great price. Today, silence is vanishing. Research shows it now takes 2,000 hours of recording to capture 1 hour of undisturbed nature sounds, compared to just 15 hours in 1968. The sisters at Mount St. Scholastica offer three questions before speaking. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Profound silence reveals what normally escapes our notice: a budding rosebush, a cardinal's flash of red, wind whispering through pines. We can create mental globes of silence by stepping away for walks or retreating to inner sanctuaries. Social media and digital distractions have become hungry wolves devouring our time, requiring deliberate Sabbaths. In silence, everything connects. Material possessions bind us emotionally. I've kept my parents' 1992 Oldsmobile running years after their deaths, lying to buyers that it's still Dad's car. Yet Buddhist wisdom reminds me that attachment causes suffering. The car isn't my parents. I carry them within me. The rule mandates sharing even personal gifts. Sister Phyllis gave her new coat to her family's housekeeper. I can get another one. The week she died, having never had a bank account, I read about financier Bruce Wasserstein's death and the Simmons Mattress Company's dismantling by investors who enriched themselves while laying off workers. Both reached the same end that week, yet Sister Phyllis felt secure enough to give away her only coat. Benedict's rule whispers a different truth. Enough is a feast. Silence is golden. Community sustains us. The question isn't whether we'll achieve more tomorrow, but whether we're truly alive today, listening deeply, seeing clearly, loving generously. This 1,500-year-old wisdom asks us to inhabit the modern world differently. Listen with the ear of your heart. Wake up. Create silence. Give from abundance. The life you're racing toward is already unfolding, if only you'll stop long enough to notice.